Tales of a well-established lesbian. Chapter 22. Stereotypes. What are stereotypes? Apparently, a stereotype is a widely held but fixed and oversimplified image or idea of a particular type of person or thing. Fixed and oversimplified. Oversimplified. I mean, no nuance, no grey areas. Get in the box. Even if you don't fit entirely in the box, get in the box. But stereotypes have a positive side, to me anyway, because quite often my stereotype has felt like it fits me, like it's mine. And stereotypes, they're everywhere. You can be busy smashing one to smithereens and turn round and find out that the very act of smashing that stereotype into pieces has cast you into an entirely new one. And they're so hard to escape because, well, we can't possibly process the nuances of absolutely everyone around us all at once. And sometimes, some of us are living, breathing reasons why stereotypes exist. So, let's have a little think. What would you say the top two lesbian stereotypes are? I'll give you a moment. Just ponder that. What springs to mind? In there somewhere was possibly that all lesbians are butch, masculine, want to be men, and possibly a little bit ugly. Yeah, that's one of them. And the other one? The classic U-Haul. The moving too far stereotype. Me? As we all know, I'm guilty of both. In fact, there are multiple charges pending against me, and I'll be honest with you, I have no signs of reformation. None. None whatsoever. It's not an awful lot of remorse, either, if I'm honest. But I had reasons for going ahead with these stereotypical behaviours. I promise you, sensible, practical reasons. Honest. It's not just because I'm a massive lesbian. I mean, things were going really well with Ashley. Especially now I'd realised it was probably better to keep Tess and Ash apart. I mean, not that Tess and I were hanging out an awful lot right now. I mean, Ashley was always at mine. With good reason. I mean, she was currently living at home with her parents and, well, she was not out to them at all. To be honest, it sounded like a nightmare to me. But Ash had plans. And when we met, she was putting in an offer on a house. So it made sense to stay with her parents for the time being. And it wasn't that long before Ash was well on the way to being a homeowner. Now, between you and me, the idea of dating someone with a mortgage freaked me out way more than her not being out. I mean, that is so grown up, owning a whole house. Not to mention, the house was in another town just up the road. But as it turns out, buying a house takes bloody ages. So I did what I do so very, very well, and I put it out of my mind for the time being, as we threw ourselves into the relationship. I say threw, it's not quite right, to be honest with you. We just sort of fell in step together. It just changes, doesn't it? One day, all of a sudden, it's just her that you want to call and tell about that good bit of news you got, or that really cute dog you saw. It's just something changes and they're that person that you want to talk to, that you want to be with. When you do things that make absolutely no sense just so that you can be together. You know, for example, Ash would stay with me even if, like, her 6 a.m. meeting was only 10 minutes down the road from her parents' house. Instead, she would forego the lie-in, come and spend the night at mine, and then get up at ridiculous o'clock in the morning to drive across to her meeting, just so that we didn't have to sleep apart. So gay and so lovely. I appreciated it. I did, because Ash worked incredibly hard. I mean, she had a drive and work ethic that never stopped. Not even when the on-call phone rang in, like, all hours of the night and day. We did have to kind of learn how to fit our relationship around the demands of her job. And I'm not going to lie, that took some trial and error, right? You see, my approach to work was a little more laissez-faire, shall we say. A little more clock in, clock out. And I failed to understand how she did not launch her work phone at the wall, especially when it rang at 4 a.m. But at the same time, I saw the satisfaction she got from work. And let's be honest, don't go falling for kick-ass, independent, career-driven people if you're gonna hold it against them later when they inevitably have to work hard or late. And yes, it is easier to say that than it is to do it. Believe me, I know. I didn't always get it right. You know, there'd be more than a few occasions where I'm sure I sulked or pouted when play got delayed at times. And I'm human. But I knew that we had to try and figure it out. And once more, I can look to my own parents for a good example, for a way of being to try. You see, my mum was one of these career-driven women of the 80s and 90s. They were shoulder pads galore, right? And her career was only briefly interrupted by my appearance. And I do mean briefly. That woman took less maternity leave than most kids get off for their school holidays, right? You know, she was the kind of woman who was working late, taking client meetings of an evening over dinner. You know, she'd be off away attending week-long conferences abroad quite regularly. And my dad, he held it down and he supported her at every turn. And when I look at my parents' relationship, I see a team. You know, a team playing to their strengths. And they just always kept working together, you know, trying to figure it out, find a solution. Whatever happened, they made the best of it, whatever it might be. And so this was the approach I was trying to take, to make the most of the quality time you have together, you know, to find little ways to sneak some TLC into her day. And Ashley tried to draw some boundaries between work and play. I'll be honest with you, the biggest thing that Ashley did that saved our relationship would stop using the Disney tune, Hi-Ho, Hi-Ho, It's Off to Work We Go, for her 5:30 a.m. alarm. Honestly, I'm really that easy to please. I am. And speaking of please, I was really pleased with the way things were going with Ash. It just kind of felt like this is who I was supposed to figure all this stuff out with. Because I do got some stuff to figure out, you know, since the Plan B police career had failed to take off. I'll be honest with you, I'd kind of been coasting along at work, you know, clocking in and clocking out. Call centre life was losing its appeal, its novelty. And I was going nowhere again, which had been absolutely fine when I just had to keep a roof over my head, petrol in the car and pizza on my plate. But now, with the way things are going with Ash, if it keeps rolling like this, you know, I'm going to need to raise my game, bring home some more bacon. There were no expectations from Ash on this. You know, it's all in my head. The money bit, anyway. Ash is more concerned with me doing something that I don't hate. And, you know what, maybe she's right. Maybe it was time for one more crack at a job in the area I'd studied. You know, give it one more spin of the wheel. And then an opportunity presented itself. My uncle had heard of a job and was pretty certain he vaguely remembered I might have once said that that's what I was doing at uni. And so he'd put my name forward, you know, like uncles do. I mean, he wasn't always the most reliable of uncles, so I didn't put too much stock in it. And then they got in touch with me. I'd love to tell you that they made me an offer I couldn't refuse, but wasn't quite the dream job I'd hoped for. It was, however, what we like to call a foot in the door, a chance at that all-important experience. So it did need to be considered, because there were a few downsides. First up, the job was 120 miles away from where I lived, which is not a small commute, if I'm honest. And second, it was for a motorhome manufacturer. Not quite the industry I'd envisioned myself in. It was more like an offer that maybe I could make work for me if I really, really tried. And if I'm totally honest, I know I did okay at the interview, but I got that job because of my uncle. But when they gave me the job, I didn't care how I got the chance. Just that somebody was finally giving me a chance. Even if I did have to downplay my butchness throughout the interview process. You know, not a tie in sight. I think I even bought one of those blouses, you know, the ones where you don't get any buttons above your boobs, you know, so that, you know, I don't know, apparently that's professional in the world. Just a nice V-neck, essentially. But yeah, I think I just toned it down, you know, to an 8, maybe. So, this offer's come in, and no matter how much I stare at the maps, I can't figure out a way to get my commute under 2.5 hours, one way. Now, I am head over heels for Ashley by this point, but 5 hours of commuting every damn day to see this girl, it didn't seem realistic. And I'll be honest with you, it didn't seem sustainable. I was going to have to live away during the week. It was the only practical solution. And as it turns out, my parents to the rescue once more. It's just a 30-minute drive from their house. So, it looks like I'm going home, folks. It was so surreal. So much of my life was driving forward into new days and new things and new experiences. And here I was, sat on my parents' sofa watching TV after dinner, like the last 10 years had never happened. It felt kind of ironic to be treating the place like a hotel after all those years of being asked if I thought the place was a hotel. Half bored though, and your mum's the chef. Happy days, like best hotel catering ever. Except, damn it, concierge dad is so nosy. Where you going? What you doing? The man loves small talk. And actually, we talk about Ashley. They're pretty impressed by her. You know, buying a house before she turns 25. Oh, my parents practically swooned. Will Ashley be coming to your cousin's wedding with you, they asked. I mean, I was hoping she would, but I hadn't actually got round to asking her yet. And my parents were dropping less than subtle hints that they'd like to meet her. And I really want her to meet them. I mean, they're gonna love her, and I'm sure she's gonna love them. One thing, though. Should I tell him she's black before they meet? I mean, not because they'll be bothered in the slightest, but more because I know they're pretty much expecting a white girl. And that surprise may register on their faces. And I just don't want anyone feeling anything less than comfortable in this situation. I mean, meeting the parents is enough pressure as it is. I talked to Ashley about it. She thinks it's best that I at least mention it before we go and visit my parents. Okay, right you are. Just casually drop into the conversation, you know, that Ashley is black without making it sound weird, or that I'm insinuating that they can't be trusted, you know, to be cool about it. Anyway, after way too many conversations that lacked the requisite perfect moment to casually drop in this information, I just went with, "Oh, Mum, by the way, Ashley's black. Just thought I should mention it." My mum laughed so hard, I'm pretty sure at me and my delivery, but agreed. It hadn't occurred to them either, and they probably would have, yes, looked surprised. I knew my dad was cool with it when he started taking the piss out of me for essentially being an equal opportunities shagger. Yeah. You know, so he's all good with that, and we can all just carry on. But bit by bit, I was starting to realise that being in an interracial relationship was going to add yet another dimension that we'd have to negotiate. Turns out my dad was right. I had absolutely no interest in doing things the easy way. Mostly because I didn't understand why these things weren't easy in the first place. But just as your awareness of homophobia, for example, grows when you start to contemplate your place in the alphabet soup, my awareness of the very real level of racism that existed grew exponentially. You might think that the UK doesn't have a particular issue with racism, that it's just confined to a particular section of England football fans. But here, it exists in a very subtle, insidious sort of way. I mean, sometimes it is outright as well, but on the whole, very subtle. It's very British racism, complete with British politeness and manners, which doesn't disguise what's really going on. And me personally, I had a lot of assumptions, unconscious bias and behaviours to unlearn, not to mention a front row seat to a whole new world of discrimination. Now, it wasn't just me though. Ashley had to deal with exactly the same experience when she'd brought a white boy home once. And, for bonus points, this hadn't been an issue when her brothers had brought white girls home. It's easier to forget about these sorts of attitudes when we live in such little echo chambers we build for ourselves. And even more so when you add on top of that fresh new relationship bubble. And when something comes along that endangers that bubble, there's two of you in it. You've got backup. And I'll be honest with you, sometimes it was just validating to have a witness who saw what you went through. For me, realising the frequency of racist microaggressions Ashley had to endure. For Ashley, realising the regularity of negative reaction to my butchness. Having somebody say, "You're not mad. I heard that too. I saw that look. I felt that hostility too." It helps. It helps minimise the impact of the gaslighting that society keeps perpetuating about tolerance and acceptance. You have to look no further than what's just happened in Spain to see that we're still not there. But yeah, God love my parents, my white Catholic parents, navigating so many dimensions they never expected to find themselves in. And they did it so well. Little hiccup here and there, obviously, but on the whole, you couldn't have asked for better. And yes, they absolutely adored Ashley when they met her. I think they liked her a little more than me. I couldn't blame them. I was falling hard for Ash. And my weekly absence was definitely making the heart grow fonder. I was living for the weekends once more. And we were making it work the best we could over that next couple of months. But that was an ungodly Monday morning cross-country commute. But it never ever felt so bad on a Friday evening. You know, summer was coming and Ashley now was a proud home owner. I mean, she mentioned it was a bit of a fixer-upper. And as we looked around the place when she got the keys, it was clear that there was quite a lot of fixing up to do. But it did give Ash a completely blank canvas. The previous residents had kindly left a tattered sofa and a table, and that was it. The house sale had taken so long to go through that Ash had been putting off buying anything for the house. So on day one, Ash is all house and no stuff. And she looks overwhelmed just for a moment or two. I mean, it's a massive job ahead of her. It's a whole new level of adulting. But I still wanted her to enjoy the moment she'd worked so hard for. She'd made a whole bunch of sacrifices to make this happen. And, you know, she'd walked away from her last relationship with her clothes in her bag, leaving the rest behind. And she was starting new. So we pulled some stuff together and we sat down for a living room picnic. And we talked through the millions of thoughts and decisions Ash needed to make. It turned out that I had almost all the basics Ash needed to be able to move in and live there for a bit. So we headed to Crazy Pete's and emptied my room and all the stuff I had in storage into her house. And then between her mum dropping off a bunch of very useful things that neither one of us would have thought to get, and the stuff I had, we did some emergency shopping. Ash was set up and able to make that 5-minute commute to her office on Monday morning. The whole point of buying a house where she'd bought it. And once she was in, there was no stopping her. You know, Project Refurb was underway. And I look back those days sitting on upturned boxes discussing sofas and central heating systems. You know, it felt so different to anything I'd experienced before. It all felt so grown up. I mean, what did we know about central heating, for God's sake? That felt like something you should only ever have to deal with when you're like a proper grown-up, you know, say after 25, you know, arbitrary age I'm going for, but that's because I was still clinging on to 24 at this point. My 25th birthday was just around the corner, and I couldn't help but think, after a quarter of a century alive, it's just downhill to central heating and pensions from here. My 25th birthday was quite a big deal to me. Not in a party or presents or celebrations kind of way. It's a big deal for me because for as long as I could remember, I was absolutely convinced I'd never live longer than 25. I had no reason for this belief. Just a feeling for as long as I could recall. It sounds ridiculous to me as I sit here now, 39 years old, telling you this. But I remember how firmly I believed it. I didn't just believe it, I felt it. You know, I joked about it a few times with people, but to them, obviously, it is just that. It's a joke. It's a flippant, facetious remark. They weren't to know that it was one of those things that felt innate to me, like I'd been born with the knowledge of my expiry date in my bones. You know, that near miss in Mallorca and a few other moments in my life, I subscribed to this theory that I was somewhat invincible until that time came. I was so certain that my time here would be brief. Without reason, just an instinct. So, being alive on the eve of my 25th birthday surprised me. And given my happy life at that moment, I was so grateful for it. But I was also terrified because the feeling hadn't gone as I'd turned 25. In fact, all I thought was, maybe this was my last year. Maybe that was the whole point, that I wasn't gonna see 26. I can't even believe I'm saying this out loud to you, because it does, it sounds so absurd now. But I believed it in my bones, I did. Funnily enough, I didn't share the full extent of my suspected timeline with Ashley. You know, that seemed like a lot of crazy to leak out in the first couple of months. Besides, Ash had gone all out for my birthday. It was a surprise. Which meant that when we got lost on our way to the venue, I was no help whatsoever, and I wasn't allowed to help. I did take some umbrage at this to begin with, until I remembered our first date and how important it had been for me to get it right. He got a bit fiery in the car, but eventually we figured it out and it all came together, and we arrived for an afternoon of quad biking and clay pigeon shooting. Oh, I was a happy birthday butch. Quad bikes were great, suitable levels of muddiness were achieved. But clay pigeon shooting, that turns out not for this butch. No thank you very much. I kind of blame my parents for this one. They'd ingrained in me what I feel is a healthy level of fear / aversion to guns. But mostly, what I didn't like, what bothered me, was the fact that I nearly took my damn shoulder off thanks to the recoil or kick or whatever you want to call it. That shotgun nearly put me on my arse more than once. Ash, on the other hand, scarily good with a gun. And when I say scarily good, emphasis on the scarily. Because you see, Ash is a brilliant career woman. You know, as long as we're in office hours, she is amazing. Outside of work, Ash is the most excitable, energetic person ever, who lacks almost any common sense. Mostly, this is adorable. While she's holding a shotgun, bouncy and excitable, not quite what myself or the instructor are looking for as she swings round after blowing yet another clay pigeon away. Terrifying. We're nearly 6 months in and Ash still makes me nervous from time to time, and not just when she's waving a double-barreled shotgun around. Oddly though, I wasn't actually nervous when we started talking about moving in together, because it wasn't really a romantic conversation. There'd been an issue one day with Crazy Pete's bank account, and I'd had to, you know, do this old-fashioned thing where I had to actually physically go into a bank and pay my money in. And suddenly, Ash and I are having a conversation about why I'm paying repeat rent only to be there at the weekends. And, well, let's be honest, I wasn't really there at the weekends because I was at Ashes every weekend. It just made no financial sense. And so I sort of moved into Ashes, but only on a weekend basis, which helped us both feel better about, you know, moving so fast. You know, stereotypes be damned, it made sense to us, and that was the bit that mattered. And plus now, I could actually be the ultimate lesbian stereotype, because, of course, as far as Ash's family were concerned, I was just a roommate and really good friend. Full cliche achieved. It was turning into a great summer. And I am making plans for all the pride when Ash announces she's off to Jamaica for 3 weeks with her mum. They go every year. I was so jealous. Right up to the point that Ash explained that even if she was out and even if I could come, it probably wouldn't be the most welcoming of experiences. And that was just her gran, never mind the rest of the neighbourhood. Still, 3 weeks apart seemed like forever, even though we were used to spending the week apart. I was going to have to stay busy. And the timing kind of worked out well as it goes, because Tess really wanted to go to Pride. And with Ashley away, that looked a lot easier to pull off. You see, there wasn't just that incident on the night out that I told you about. Shortly after Ash had got the house, we spent a weekend with the curtains closed, the doors locked, and our phones turned off. We only came up for air and replenishments, christened every room in the house, and had a thoroughly indecent time. At some point on the Sunday afternoon, whilst we were both button naked on the stairs, there was a knock at the door. We ignored it. They knocked some more. We ignored it some more. There were important matters at hand. Knocking turned into hammering on the front door. But whoever they were, they could piss right off. I mean, things were getting pretty urgent on both sides of the door, if you catch my drift. And then Tess's voice comes through the letterbox. Are you there? Is everything okay? You're not answering your phone. No shit, Sherlock, I thought to myself. Ash, on the other hand, is incensed. She tears open the front door, baggy t-shirt barely covering her modesty. And I hear her explain to Tess in no uncertain terms that I was, in fact, in the rudest of health, in no immediate danger, and that I would be in touch when I wanted to be. And by the way, a turned off phone is not an invitation for Tess to turn up unannounced at the house. I was a little conflicted because, you know, I could see how it was sweet of Tess to worry and then, you know, to do something about it. But I could also see Ash's point. Ash said once she'd seen that my car was outside her house, she probably should have just put two and two together and gone home. I'll be honest, my conflict was resolved when I found myself on the receiving end of a very fired up and passionate Ashley. You know, there's always an upside in there somewhere. But yeah, needless to say, I wasn't making plans for tea for three anytime soon. So with Ashley away, I made my Pride plans and I figured, do you know what, it's a great chance to hang out with Tess and to meet up with a few of the girls that I'd met on Gaydar, the ones that had become online friends. And this turned out to be one of the best decisions. Zoe and I got on as well in real life as we did online, and the moment we met, it was clear that we were not each other's type. There was no issue about any of that. We were just gonna be good friends. The jokey flirting would remain forever that jokey. And so, Tess and I drank the hours away with Zoe and her friends that afternoon, having a gay old time. Until Tess gets a call from Norman. We'd completely forgotten that we were supposed to get her back for date night. Oops. Tess takes off for the train station because apparently turning up with a drunk me wasn't going to make things any better. I don't know what it was, but, you know, Norman just did not respond to my charms at all. So it probably was a very good call by Tess. Zoe invites me back to hers. She's meeting up with her flatmate before heading out again. And you know what? I'm having a blast being among my own. The streets of London are full of happy, smiling people celebrating themselves. You know what? Let the day continue. Let's do this. I found myself in a pretty fancy part of London, sitting in a gorgeous apartment, being utterly me and making friends. If I liked Zoe, I adored her flatmate and friend, Jason. He was gorgeous, gay, stylish, funny, smart, and a little bit nerdy at times. And I could have talked to him all night. In fact, I think I did. Our tastes overlapped and intersected all over the board. His was a masculinity I could really relate to. And as they pulled out the sofa bed for me, I couldn't wait to tell Ashley all about my new friends. She was going to love them. I was sure of it. And I do remember just feeling really chuffed as I fell asleep. Because I tell you what, dating is hard. But making new friends in your 20s? Way harder. And here I was with a cheeky 2-for-1. Oh, life was ticking along nicely. And its timing couldn't be better. Because we're heading into wedding season. And I am not going to be dateless. In fact, I am relishing the opportunity to turn up with a sensational woman on my arm. And there was one wedding that summer I was particularly pleased to have such a date for. Because the English Rose was getting married. Her and Mr. whatever his name was had requested my attendance. And not just for the evening do either. Oh no, I got a full day pass. Because why wouldn't I want to see my first love exchanging vows with a man in the eyes of God? Of course, what else would I want to do on a Saturday? That's not to say I wasn't as happy as Larry for Rose. I just didn't really want to sit through that. But I knew it was important to Rose. And that's the bit that mattered. Because I'll always care about Rose. And if she wanted me there, there was where I'd be. And Ashley got it. She was perfectly supportive. Didn't have a moment of weird insecurity about the whole thing. And oh my days, she borderline stole the day she looked that good. I'd done all right here. I really had. Hello and thank you for listening to chapter 22. We have now covered a quarter of a century of my life. I feel like we should have cake or something. It's all going quite nicely for me at this point in time, isn't it? But don't you worry, listeners. It's just the lull of the summer. Join me next week as my flair for the dramatic creeps back in. Don't forget, you can follow me on Insta at WellEstablishedLesbian. You can check the website out at WellEstablishedLesbian.com or join the community on Reddit where you can reach out to me or other listeners. You can find us at RTOAWEL. Thank you, as always, for the privilege of your time, and whatever you're doing with your week, make it a good one. Take care.